Yes, that was pretty loud. All right, yo, yo, everybody. Here we are on another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about vitamin D, a very important vitamin. And on the show, we got Dr. Jared Bugay, who is a regular.
Yep.
And then we got newbie Sam Snyder, Dr. Sam Snyder.
Howdy, howdy.
And do you go by Sam or Samuel?
Samuel if I'm in trouble, Sam if...
I like that.
We're cool.
Okay, so we're cool. So it's Sam in this environment. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Katie Phillips.
Hey, guys.
Who has been on the podcast before. What was the episode you were on? I can't remember.
Iron.
Oh, yeah. Man, look at this. You're on the vitamin episode, so.
I like my vitamins, so.
I know we were like thinking about topics, and then Katie was like, yeah, let's just do one on vitamin D. So yeah. There we go. So this is Katie inspired here. Vitamin D is obviously important. There's some pretty cool stats about it that we'll go over. We'll go over kind of like who should take it, why you should take it, all that sort of stuff. For me personally, like when I look back at my youth and in my career in running, I've had about 10 fractures in my life, like meaning like just playing football, baseball, and just being a kid and like jumping out of trees and, you know, falling down hills and stuff. And I just fractured easy as a kid. And then when I got to running elite at a high level, my last year in college and then a couple years after that, for about 5-8 years after that, whenever I would start peaking, kind of getting close to the end of the season, I would always get bronchitis.
That's really random.
And I'm like, that it was so annoying and it would just always happen. And then all of a sudden, I look back at my career and I'm like, I was vitamin D deficient, like literally that whole time. That's why I would fracture so easy. And, that's why I would get, you know, bronchitis when, you know, the colder weather would hit, which is like, you know, obviously the late fall and winter was a lot of the championship races I was running, because at the time, the US marathon championships and half marathon championships were always in the winter. And then I was training for the Olympic trials, which was in the winters in January of 2012. So like, I always like literally got sick around that time. And I was just like, yeah, man, like that's my vitamin D sob story. It's just like, I just knew I was deficient. So since then I take probably on average, once I realized this, probably about for 8 years now, I probably take about 15,000 IUs a day. So a pretty decent amount.
Yeah.
Substantial.
Do you take that in the summertime too?
Yeah,
mainly winter.
And I'm not like obsessed with it where I have to take it every single day. Like if I travel and I forget it, it's fine. It's not a big deal. But pretty consistent. I'd say probably in a year, about 75% of the time, that's what I'm taking.
Yeah.
Even in the summer.
I would agree with that. I do the same exact thing. I think especially if you're like a working adult and you work inside all day, you're really going to be lacking in that vitamin D. So, yeah.
Yeah. So how much of it actually, you know, cause obviously we hear about that and, you know, if it's the summertime and sunlight and like how much of that actually is affecting your vitamin D rates?
Yeah. So, if you're out in the sun, you know, and you have reasonable skin exposure, you're going to naturally produce about 20,000 international units, at one time. And so that's your body's synthetic production that doesn't take into account your supplementation. But, you know, if you're able to get it naturally from the sunlight, that obviously is a better source than supplementation. But as you know, the sun is less apparent now that it's fall and you're not exactly running outside, you know, shirtless and, you know, in shorts. So it's like, you're not getting that same exposure to the sun and you're not getting any direct sunlight at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. So you almost have to supplement. And, you know, there's a functional range of...
What if you're in Florida?
Well, that's a different story. You know, in Northeast Ohio, obviously you're not getting the same level of sun exposure as you are in a state like Florida. But, you know, if you're able to tan, then you're getting that natural sun exposure in the skin.
Mm-hmm. Because even on sunny days in the winter, just because the earth is on an axis, it's not straight up vertical. Still, I think there's a certain latitude line, and forget it right off the top of my head. But even like Northeast Ohio on a sunny day in the winter, you're still really not getting enough,
right?
Just because you're, you know, however many more miles away from the sun.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, and I think you're just not getting the bulk of the rays either. You know, you're just kind of getting a little bit of the shearing across the globe. Yeah, vitamin D is interesting. Like, let's hit some stats. So, I mean, I always thought about this, like a large portion of your genome is affected by vitamin D, but like they'd say like up to 10%. There's multiple functions it plays a role in. I think probably the most salient that people think of is bone health.
Yes.
Which is why I was bringing up the story of me having all those fractures as a kid. And then, you know, immune function is another obvious thing that people allude with vitamin D, and which is kind of plays hand in hand with like people being more sick in the fall and the winter and spring and things like that, just because one, they're contained more indoors, so the communicable diseases travel faster, obviously. But secondarily is just most people get a drop off in vitamin D. I think a lot of this was realized too with COVID and how much vitamin D plays a role with COVID, because, you know, especially if you're African American and you live in the North, like it is a non-negotiable that you need vitamin D supplementation in a pretty decent amount, just because with the skin being darker, you know, if you're Middle Eastern or African American or something, like with your skin being darker, it's just an absolute necessity that you have a much higher dosage of vitamin D. And we see this even with Naomi, my stepdaughter, and she's mixed. And whenever we give her high dose vitamin D, you know, up 10 to 15,000 IU, she functions a lot better with her autism. And, you know, I think that's just one of those important factors to keep in mind as well.
Yeah. Vitamin D is also proven to help with mood, help with energy. It also helps with like whole body systemic inflammation. There's so many great functions that it does. And it's actually considered like a hormone in our body.
Yeah.
So it does so much more than we can even imagine.
Jared, explain to us that pathway, because I know you want to.
Give us the science.
Yeah. So in your typical supplementation, there's vitamin D3, which is called cholecalciferol. D2 is ergocalciferol. D3 is more readily used in the body. It's more absorbed. So if you're looking to purchase a specific supplement, make sure that it is the vitamin D3, and particularly with K2, vitamin K2 with it. So it's interesting because the D3 is kind of how the body absorbs it, but that's not the complete story. It has to go through a couple other steps called hydroxylation. Basically just adds a hydroxyl group to the molecule to make it more of an active hormone. So the active hormone form is called calcitriol. So calcitriol is the active hormone form, which you can't purchase, you can't buy it. In extreme cases of vitamin D deficiency, like a functional med practitioner might be able to.
Can they inject it?
Inject it,
yeah,
I
exactly.
believe. Yeah, yeah, like that's like hospital level grade vitamin D.
Yeah, and I know even for me, like when I was going through some of my DNA testing and looking at epigenetic modifiers and SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, about vitamin D, there are certain people that just don't absorb it well through the gastric, so through the GI tract. And so they do need actually vitamin D infusion. So that is actually becoming more popular.
Yeah. And since, you know, vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin, you would want to take it with a fat source or an oil base. The one I take is with coconut oil. So it helps the body absorb it a little bit better. And, you know, one of the most interesting facts, I think, about vitamin D is that there's a receptor in every single cell of the body for vitamin D.
Yes.
And, you know, for athletes and for strength and powerlifting, the mTOR pathway is activated by vitamin D. So, you know, that's really helping in the recovery, the mechanistic target of rapamycin. It activates those satellite cells to repair those damaged muscle tissue. So that's where you get the muscle hypertrophy from, is that vitamin D. So, you know, maybe theoretically, like in the wintertime, like maybe supplementing more vitamin D because you're not getting that direct sunlight in the in those winter months if you're doing a lot of strength and conditioning like that. So just you know, an idea there. But I think that it's an interesting in how the body actually repairs itself. So in the protein synthesis and so mTOR is pretty cool.
During the 2020 marathon trials, I was working with one of the physicians that marathon Olympic trials. I was working with one of the physicians that literally categorized. He was the main physician that categorizes stress fractures. Like he created the classification of stress fractures. And we were talking about some of his stuff from his textbook. And I was like, all right, so say you get, you know, a runner in your office, they got a stress fracture. What's the first thing you tell them? He's like, oh, they have to be on a minimum of 10,000 IU of vitamin D. Like, no question. That's a non-negotiable. He's like, if somebody gets a stress fracture, period, vitamin D has to be elevated, by bottom line. And I know in some functional medicine practices, you know, when I was going through some of the functional medicine training, you know, if somebody shows actually low vitamin D levels, they'll advise for a short period of time. I mean, even through the Cleveland Clinic, they'll say this, like getting up to 50,000 IU, like initially, and taking in vitamin D, like a super high dose, and then obviously backing off once levels balance. But what are some of the risks of taking too much vitamin D? Because obviously when you start throwing around these banana numbers, because if you go to Vitamin World or Walgreens and you get a vitamin D and you're just kind of like, just, I want to take more vitamin D, you know, just popping it. Like, it's only going to be about 1,000 IU. So it's, which is a international unit of measurement for it. So it's going to actually be a lot less than what we're saying.
Yeah.
And most people are like, oh, why do you take vitamin D? And they might be taking 1,000, which in the end we're throwing out 10,000, 15,000 kind of numbers. So what are some risks of high dose vitamin D?
Well, before you go into that, my question would also be, if you look on, you know, you do any kind of research, like the recommended daily dose that you'll find for things is like not even 1,000.
That's bananas.
600 to 800 IU. So that was actually something that I wanted to discuss, was like the, you know, whoever really comes up with these recommendations is like, it's ridiculous. You know, this would be like the bare minimum of, you know, you're going to survive and be a living organism.
Yeah.
But when you start talking about like performance and, you know, trying to build strength, build conditioning, it's like that is so much more.
Yeah. And stave off, you know, osteoporosis, you know, better enjoy your winter so you're not sick all the time, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's a shockingly low number. And I'm glad you brought that up because I can't even believe it's that low.
Going off what you said, Leo, about, can you take too much? So with it, that, I mean, if you're just popping vitamin D, like no one's business, not really knowing what you're doing, not getting your levels checked, it can actually cause you to your system of, and I'm sure Jared would be so much better with the scientific words behind this, but basically it can take the calcium out of your bone. And so instead of it, it's basically your bones are trying to repair too fast that it almost can't keep up. So the calcium is actually coming out instead of it going into your bones and building it up.
I remember.
Yeah. And I think like, if you want to prevent that or recognize that that's an issue and track it, then with your primary care physician, you can just do a CBC once a year and just see if you have elevated levels of blood calcium.
Yeah.
And then hypercalcemia. And if that's the case, then obviously, you know, you're probably taking a little bit too much and just literally back off. Like it's, you know, cut it in half, or maybe even short period of time. It might be kind of like one of those things where it might be interim as well. So, but it's a pretty low risk.
Yeah. You really gotta be going crazy with the vitamin D.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jared, like you were mentioning before, usually you take vitamin K because you don't want calcium in the bloodstream itself. That helps with the absorption.
The vitamin K essentially helps pull the calcium back into the bone. So it redirects the calcium. So.
Yeah. I think you're also going to get some GI issues, you know, that'll show up kind of like before even blood testing. You're going to just feel a little off. You're going to feel like gut wise, it's just not right. Like probably backing down on the levels. I mean, you're having to go, I think, north of 20,000 IU to feel that. But again, as long as it's in a fatty meal, because if you take a fat, if you take, you know, and this is kind of point, going off what you said earlier, if you take vitamin D with a fatty meal or with a fatty soluble situation like coconut oil or something like that, it will absorb it by half, you know, 40 to 60-ish percent or so is what they kind of say. So it will literally increase the amount of absorption. And if you're taking it with K2, obviously that helps replicate the, or helps protect with the situation with the calcium being in the blood. But again, like follow your GI tract, just kind of follow just how you feel from like a general malaise standpoint. The bigger risk is obviously having calcium in the blood vessels, which can increase, you know, hardening of the vessels and things like that. But again, I think your GI tract will let you know first.
Yeah. one thing I really did want to talk about was the effects that like vitamin D has like mood and energy, and like especially people who like deal with clinical depression or even like just seasonal depression.
Seasonal affectation disorder.
Like a lot of times if you just start to implement vitamin D into your daily routines, especially throughout the winter months, you can actually reverse that and be in a much better mood.
Yeah.
I've noticed too, just because I'm the only female here. So for females listening to this, like throughout your menstrual cycle, if you start, like I started to take vitamin D and like my PMS symptoms, cramping, all of that, which are usually caused due to inflammation, has significantly decreased, like not even there anymore, just because
that's pretty awesome.
Taking
vitamin D. How quickly did you notice a turnaround?
It was probably, and like I'm, this is TMI, I have used to have very like irregular cycles, and I swear to God, ever since I started taking vitamin D, I mean, I take a couple other supplements too, I have been very regular. My symptoms, like PMS symptoms, all of that have significantly decreased. And it probably took like, I would say after the first month I started to notice, but it wasn't till like the third or the, or like the second or the third month, I was like, wow. And then I went a month where I didn't take vitamin D because it was, oh, the summertime. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get sun. And then
kind of everything.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. And that was the only thing that changed. So what did I do? I just started taking vitamin D again, and things have been great.
Yeah. No wonder why you wanted to do an episode on it.
I know. Well, because I literally, I swear by it, but I take a vitamin D3 and K2 supplement together, but I just, yeah, it's like, I swear by it. Like I tell my parents, I'm like, are you taking your vitamin D when they're in like a bad mood?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you could do that with your significant other or your siblings or somebody that you're close with that you kind of know. And you're just like, you know, just take some more vitamin D. Just like, you know, just relax a little bit.
That's going to be the new passive aggressive way of like being ticked off at your spouse. It's like, did you take your vitamin D yet?
Exactly.
But going off of that, I didn't just run like an experiment on myself. I actually did a lot of research, and there's a lot of research out there for women who struggle with like irregular cycles or having cramping and all of that. Like, especially when you've gone to the doctor and they tell you like, oh, there's nothing wrong. And you're like, no, there's something wrong. Like, always try getting your vitamin D levels checked and, you know, go from there.
Yeah, Jared, we're going to have to find another source for your mood swings over here. What? Yeah, I mean, just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, going off of your point, like the you know, inflammation and the combating that, like, yeah, vitamin D, it helps regulate the production of TNF-alpha and interleukin-6. Mm-hmm. So patients with chronic pain, you know, chronic inflammation, like 100% vitamin D is going to be important.
Well,
that.
This is an important point too, because say you are in chronic pain and you go and, or you have gone to like a pain med doctor or pain specialist or something like that. I really highly doubt they're advising you to do this. They're probably not looking at this hormone. Yeah. They're probably not advising you to take high dose vitamin D. If you suggest it to them, they might even poo-poo it, to be honest. And I think it's important in some sense to, you know, defend yourself on this and just make it a priority to get ample amount of this vitamin in, so that way you can just feel better in general, because the likelihood of your general practitioner, your family doctor, or even a pain specialist of actually advising you to do this is very, very low.
Yeah.
It is getting more popular, and it just has to do with the fact that they're not really able to prescribe a medication for it. You know, they just, they, you know, it's like, yeah. If you go to your family doctor and you say you're depressed, like, and they tell you to take vitamin D, like that doesn't feel great. That doesn't feel like they're giving you a great solution.
Yeah.
But if you kind of notice, like Katie said, if you have these mood swings and you're just not vibing right, then, you know, it's a nice thing to do, a nice little internal audit, self kind of test to see, like, yeah, do you feel better with it? Yeah. So you should, you know, definitely tinker with it.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, it's not the end all be all. It's not going to cure everything, but like if there's just something that's a little off inside of you, like get it looked at, take it and try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. If every cell of your body has receptors for it, like it behooves us. Whether we have GI issues, mood issues, muscle recovery issues, fracture issues, injury issues, pain, chronic pain syndromes, like, dude, just take vitamin D.
It like, does it's so such, much. It's kind of like magnesium in a way. Yeah. How much they both
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
I just want to go over real quick, just like a couple numbers, because I think it's important that if someone were to get tested, like what those numbers actually mean. So we're talking like nanograms per milliliter. That's the standard of measure. So anything less than 12, that's like a severe deficiency.
Yeah, single digits is terrible.
12 to 20, that's a definite deficiency as well. 20 to 30 is insufficiency. 30 to 50, that's sufficient. They classify it as optimal. But for athletes, in the 50 to 100, is like high end normal. So you think if you're an athlete, you're going to be using more of that on a daily basis. So, you know, you would want to have those storages and levels elevated. And then greater than 100 to 150, then they're starting to get into like a little bit of toxicity. And the technical term for it is hypervitaminosis D. I think that could show up on a radiology report. I think they can actually see that on imaging, but to be honest with you, I forgot what that looks like. So I couldn't put
yeah, once
that
you
out,
pass but, for part four, yeah, you're not thinking about that anymore.
Sam probably knows about that.
Don't look at me for that. Okay. Something is too white or not white enough.
That's right. Yes. That. Yes. Yes. I think the epiphysis like phrase or something or looks like it's getting squished, but I just wanted to run through those numbers. So, you know, if you do get tested, you know, definitely try to be in that. If you're an athlete, 50 to 70 range would be ideal. So,
yeah. And push to get tested.
Yeah.
100%. You know, like, I mean, I think it's important to be an advocate for yourself. And, like I said earlier, you know, your general practitioner might not advise it, but I think it's important for everybody to just track this and keep an eye on it and make sure that this is an absolute priority. And in terms of Jared and I did an episode on ranking our top five vitamins, and this was always at the top of the list. Yep. Because of just its general impact on the body. And so, you know, protect yourself and just be smart about it, and definitely don't be afraid of this particular vitamin.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about, is it safe for pregnant women to take it? Because, you know, we always want to talk about folate. That's the first one that gets thrown out, mm-hmm. right? With baby development. And they'll also say, you know, you want to be careful. You don't want to take too much vitamin A. So where does vitamin D kind of fall in that? For somebody who's growing a small human inside of them. And they found that it actually is another super important supplement for baby development. First year of life when they're born, but also developing inside a mom. So vitamin D stimulates something called nerve growth factor. So we're kind of talking more about that mood and the effects on the nervous system that vitamin D has. And they found that like babies that were deficient in vitamin D, like that for some reason, you know, we're going deep into the chemistry. So Jared, you're going to have to help me out
goodness.
Here. But they... you know, essentially the baby's brain doesn't get as much oxygen through the bloodstream, and then the hippocampus develops, you know, at a impeded rate. So then they actually found some correlation between vitamin D deficiency in early years of development with like autism and schizophrenic disorders.
Couldn't agree more.
Very interesting.
Could not agree more. Yeah. Absolutely. Wild. Like I said, even with Naomi, night and day difference with her taking vitamin D and, mm-hmm. you know, and I think like, you know, one of the things too, that it helps with is like clearance of like toxic or like toxins and, you know, just helping the liver function at a higher level. And then when you, you know, like she's really adapt or really responsive to like dyes, food dyes, and just pesticides and just like poorly processed foods, and vitamin D helps you clear that pretty well. Mm-hmm. And so that plays a huge role in that arena.
And there was one more thing about, they theorized that the reason vitamin D is so effective for, you know, mood stimulus as well as just like the function of the nervous system is because it regulates the calcium pumps within the, you know, the nerves in the brain. So yeah. Calcium, if you don't have a background in chemistry, is really what your nerves use the most to create like an electrical gradient between the inside of the cell and the outside of the mm-hmm. cell. So because we know vitamin D is all about absorbing calcium, directing it where to go, yeah. that's how they theorize why it has such an effect on like excitatory versus inhibitory pathways in the brain.
Oh.
So if someone with depression, you know, they're just, it's all inhibitory. Everything's just down, or so they're able to, vitamin D kind of comes in and regulates that. So it's more of a balanced state.
That's pretty cool.
That's really that interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Oh. I think like, you know, when you think about like historically, you know, back in the day, you know, let's say like 1700s, 1800s, you know, there's scurvy, there's rickets, you know, there's all these different diseases that came about that helped us understand like vitamins, you know, vitamin C with scurvy, mm-hmm. vitamin D with rickets. And, you know, like they just kind of used different like fatty fishes to help with rickets, which was one of the major deficits of vitamin D, and sort of save the general population of a lot of countries with fish, you know?
So the U.S. added, they started fortifying milk in 1930 because of rickets. It was just like decimating, like especially the northern states of the U.S.
Yeah.
But they fortify it with D2. So we were talking about the whole day is like D3 has been kind of the optimal source. Yeah. It's the animal source that you get from fish. Whereas D2 they find in like mushrooms, plant sources, like maybe soy, which it's good because it literally did. It saved a lot of the country from having rickets.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. If you look at it, like the rickets rates in the 1700s and 1800s, it was always higher in inland northern countries, but like lower in like northern countries that were coastal, like, you know, like that basically had like easily fishing access. Mm. And it's because they were just consuming fish that had high levels of vitamin D. And if you think of like cold water fish, they're very fatty because obviously they survive in cold water. And so that helped with that transfer of that. So if you go into like a Siberia, yeah, they're going to suffer more because they don't have a lot of like fish in inland Siberia, but like Britain suffered less that had like basically coastal. Mm. Yeah. So it's very interesting when you look at the, like the transfer of rickets. So like here in Ohio, like we're going to definitely suffer more because we're locked inland versus like a Maine who would be like coastal. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. That's pretty cool that the diet, you know, if you're going to eat, you know, if you're going to consume a fatty fish, I mean, it's going to benefit you in other ways too. Like the omega-3s, you know, we talked about on one of our other episodes about, you know, the importance of omega-3 fatty acids. And, you know, I think it all just kind of helps just support the same systems, like, you know, vitamin D, fat-soluble vitamin, omega-3 fats that, you know, helps regulate the nervous system and keep those nerve cells myelinated. It also helps with, you know, repairing of the gut lining, and, you know, you can throw magnesium in there too. But, you know, I think that, you know, consuming a fish like that, or, you know, the liver of a particular organism like that, it's just going to keep, it's going to support you in multiple different ways other than just, you know, the vitamin D2.
Right.
Or D3.
So as we're kind of rounding third on the episode here, any final points about vitamin D that we want to make?
I was just going to say, I wonder how much fish you would have to eat to have sufficient amount of vitamin D.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of these things are like scalable, right? Because if you really are at risk for like something like rickets, yeah. and then you take cod liver oil, or, you know, you eat, you know, a bunch of fatty fish, then, you know, it's going to be feel pretty awesome. Like you're going to get a nice, like a little boost. But if you're looking, like Jared was saying earlier, like a high level athlete, like we work with USA Track, like if you are at the tippy top of the human species, like mm-hmm. you are operating at the highest level possible, it behooves you to ride that line of the most you can take in while being safe. And I think, like, you know, but kind of my final point is, like, people are probably wondering, all right, well, what should I take? You know, if you just do a general dive into the research, I mean, I think the safe high level would be 4,000 IU. We have obviously thrown out there much higher levels. I personally take 15,000 IU, so three times that amount. But I do consistent CBCs to make sure I don't have hypercalcemia. And I had already alluded to before, I struggle to take it in, you know, through my GI tract. So I do need to take a higher dosage. And because I'm just not absorbing it well, that's one thing to look at. And also, you know, I have a history of having low levels of it, you know, just from a functional standpoint. And so I think if you're wondering where to start, I think 4,000 IU is very safe. And then if you're not noticing a change in symptoms, then just go higher and then be in communication with your family doctor. And then at that point, do some testing to just make sure, like, you might be deficient, to make sure your calcium levels aren't high, but it's probably going to be okay to go even a little higher.
Well, that's a good point too. We always say you can't out supplement a terrible diet too. So it's like,
man, great point.
You really, before you even start into the supplementation world, it's like you have to be doing the little things right, like eating enough protein. You should have some semblance of a vegetable and a fruit on your plate. and just avoiding like inflammatory things, like, you know, fried food that's in whatever kind of oil,
processed foods and all that. Yeah. Poor oils like castor and sunflower oil and stuff.
Great point, Sam. Really good point.
Shots and stuff. I try.
I mean, I think at the backbone of pretty much every recommendation here is it doesn't make any sense to, you know, buy all these supplements and do all this stuff if you're just eating processed foods constantly. It just makes no sense. Like you're so much better off just eating like natural foods. I mean, it's the reason why like Europeans are just naturally healthier, and, you know, people from a lot of other countries are naturally healthier because they're just focusing so much more on natural foods. It's like you go to a grocery store, like even in Paris, I was in Paris last month. You go to a grocery store in Paris and it's like the frozen section is almost nothing. Like it's almost like it's like your average corner grocery store, and they're not very big. They're all just basically fruit stands, vegetable stands, and meats, and like good healthy, like the butcher is right there doing his thing. Almost nothing is frozen. And if you're in Paris, like you just walk to the market pretty much every day to get your food. You're not like piling a bunch of food from Costco in your fridge and keeping it frozen. Like it's fresh. And it's like that process is just so healthy. And, you know, it's like just focusing on non-processed foods is just an absolute key.
Yeah, this isn't a fix-all. This is just something that, yes, it is our top supplement. It is like widely regarded as it's very powerful, but, you know, this isn't the fix-all. You know, there's, like we said, there's a lot of other things that, you know, you have to be doing right in order to, you know, kind of boost yourself and I guess the buzzword, I guess, optimize where you're at in lieu of taking the vitamin D. Like, you know, if you're, like you say, if you have a poor diet, if you have poor habits, if you have poor sleep, like that isn't going to be completely fixed or hardly at all fixed by, you know, vitamin D. It's just going to, you know, stabilize your mood. It's going to help you along that journey, but
yeah,
it's
but
not
I,
your
I
big
think- I think that's an important point that even Katie made earlier is like a lot of times, like I used to always joke, and I've said this story numerous times in this podcast, is like when I was in college and you sit down at the table, because I was at a small Christian school and we had a great running team, and we would like take over like two tables at dinner for like in the dining hall. And, you know, you look at somebody's plate, you can tell who is running well and who's not running well. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is if somebody is humming, they're firing in all cylinders, they're at the top of their game, they're just cranking, they're going to be an All-American, they're going to vie for a national title, like they're checking the boxes, their plate looks beautiful. But if you get somebody that's injured, they got a stress fracture, they're down in the dumps, they're, you know, like whatever, like their plate looks terrible. Mm-hmm. And so I think like the concept of like elevating your mood will help you make the right decisions to sleep better, the right decisions mm-hmm. to eat better, because
that's true.
When everything is firing on all cylinders, you are more likely to make the better decision. And yes. And adding a vitamin D to a sad situation, a seasonal affectation disorder, can actually motivate you to eat better, to sleep better, mm-hmm. to just live right, and just be on the offense and not be on the defense, not be affected by life, not be like, oh, woe is me and this sucks and this mm-hmm. is just our reality, but to actually feel like I'm going to attack the day and I'm not going to let it be a victim to the day.
I like that.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Good perspective.
Any other final little roundabouts here with vitamin D before we close out the podcast?
Nothing I can think of.
Gosh, the only thing I thought was, well, man, if I don't have vitamin D supplementation, can I do red light? Can I do infrared sauna?
Yeah, should great point.
Should I go to the tanning bed? And the answer is no. That's a short answer. It was not the right.
It feels good, though.
It does feel good. And there's obviously a lot of other benefits, but it's not the right wavelength. So you need UVB. Wavelength B.
UVBs, yes.
And if you go to any tanning salon off the street, there it's primarily UVA, which yeah. is just making your skin brown and giving you melanomas.
Yep. Yeah. If you look at like the sphere of the earth and, you know, basically the UVBs are going to attack this direction straight on. And then if we're tilted, like in the winter, then you're going to get your fringe UVAs across the skipping across the top of the globe, which would be the kind of the northern states and countries. But again, if you're on the equator, you're sort of always, again, facing the sun pretty much directly. So you're going to always kind of get that UV ray that's going to help with the vitamin D production. So great point. That's actually, I often justify that when I go to the tanning bed every now and again, but it's not true.
I mean, maybe a little bit.
I like to go to the tanning bed in the winter, one, to just not feel like a lemon, but two.
Because you'll look like me if you don't, right?
This is true.
Really?
Yeah.
You get pale?
I do. My mom and sister were redheads.
Oh, yeah. I always just thought you were naturally tan.
My mom said they were all gingers. And, but anyways, more so because when I do go to warmer climates, like in the winter, like if you go travel for vacation, you don't get fried like right off the mm-hmm. bat. So you create a base and that just helps you protect, you know? So yeah. Anyways, that's my logic. All right. Well, I think this is a great episode, guys. Yeah. So I appreciate you guys coming on and elucidating a little bit of the concepts of vitamin D, and hopefully this was beneficial. If you know anybody, if you're listening and you know anybody, that is in the scenario and can use some benefit from vitamin D, please send this episode to them. If you have any questions or concerns about the episode, reach out to us. We'd be happy to answer. And again, thanks for joining us. All the best.
Bye.
See ya.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.